This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy Talksplode with Mike Perkins. Stand up! Let's get it right. Stand up! Let's keep it tight. Stand up! Let's get it together. Stand up! Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. This is iFanboy Talksplode. It is your chance to hear us talk with some of the best and brightest in the comic book industry. And this week, we're talking with Mr. Mike Perkins, who is one of my favorite artists. I originally found his work in the pages of the Union Jack miniseries written by Christos Gage, and then more in Captain America. And now he is the artist for Stephen King's The Stand, which has just passed the halfway point of that series. They're getting ready to launch the new miniseries Hard Cases. We're going to talk about that at length and the rest of Mike's career up until this point. And I tell you what, let's jump right in. We are joined now by Mr. Mike Perkins. Mike, how you doing?
Thank you.
It's always good to hear from you. You're one of my favorite people to see at comic book conventions. As we
That's because I buy you beer.
It's true. And there you go. That's the key. If you want to do a Chris Niesman interview, just buy me a beer. It's the best way to do it. And you have good taste in beer because you're English.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, you are currently in entering the second half of The Stand.
Yeah.
Which does it feel weird knowing that you're in the second half, or is it, where are you mentally with it?
It feels great because we're actually halfway through. And there's that little bit of light at the end of the tunnel to reach for. But it's it's a long run, it's long haul, but it's what I always wanted to do. Yeah. I always wanted such a long run on something, and something that's got the prestige of The Stand to do it on as well, whereby everything you've done is it's done by you.
Sure.
So you have that big body of work there. So that's just fantastic.
Well, it's, we were talking, about that beer, and that was,
right.
at a Chicago convention, about 3 years ago, I was sitting down with, and you were really excited, and you're like, tomorrow they're announcing that I'm gonna be the artist on The Stand, and you were so excited about it, at that point. I mean, of course, you had your experience with CrossGen, and and Union Jack, and some great stuff at Marvel, and you and Steve Eftian and the whole group of artists on Captain America were doing amazing work. But I mean, that was Captain America was really Steve Eftian's book.
Definitely. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to move on from Captain America, because I mean, I loved doing the book and I loved working with Ed. But the fact was, it was Steve's book. He started it. And no matter if I was doing issues on my own, people would still think that Steve was doing it.
Sure.
So it was more a case of, okay, it's time to move on, time to establish my name just that little bit further. And then they offered me the stand, and I thought, okay, well, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to establish my name, really. So
the stand is going to be in its entirety. How many issues are we looking at?
30 issues. Altogether.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, that's a 30 issue run on a book, especially a finite series. I mean, you look at right. You know, some of the great finite series that are out there. You know, you look like at Preacher, and like Steve Dillon is so tied to that, and that's the experience that you're going to have with the stand.
No, it's just so nice that, you know, that after it's wrapped up, that there won't be anybody coming afterwards saying, okay, well, you know, here's my take on it. You know, it's such a finite thing that, you know, it's all wrapped up in that one package, and that's going to be fantastic.
Sure, sure. And, you know, kind of moving on from that, and you said that it's kind of the light at the end of the tunnel. You can see the finish line on it, even though you're enjoying it. Once you're done with the stand, do you want to go back to maybe doing, you know, a 6-issue run here, or maybe a fill-in there, or
I think it's nice to might be able to do that. I mean, I'm not averse to doing another long run on something, but I think I'd like to jump around a little bit more. You know, not so much a fill in here or a fill in there, but you know, just do like a 4-issue series, a 6-issue mm-hmm. series, something like that. You know, and I mean, I'm doing another one shot as well. That I try to fit in between the arcs that I'm doing. And Marvel should announce that at some point.
Very cool.
So I can't even say who the character is or anything, but it's nice to be able to do some Marvel superhero stuff, as well as doing the stand stuff as well.
You know, I look at the stand stuff, and it's... Scotty Young is doing some amazing stuff with the Wonderful World of Oz.
And, that's great.
Oh, it's fantastic, you know, but I know, from talking with Scotty that there was that just initial kind of, question in the back of his mind is, do I want to remove myself from mainstream Marvel comics where he was on an X-Men book. I mean, you were working on Captain America. Was there ever that moment of doubt? It's like, do I really want to go away from superheroes for 2 or 3 years? Will people forget about me?
No, I don't. Not for me. Not so much. I think maybe just coming from a European or an English standpoint, most of our comics aren't based within the superhero mm-hmm. universe anyway. I mean, we've grown up with it. We've grown up with the American comics, but a lot of our comics are not specifically about the superhero. So for me, it was more. It's almost as if it's a European comic, but you know, mm-hmm. Marvel publishing it. So for me, that wasn't a consideration. But saying that, you know, you're drawing it and you're talking to different editors, and they're talking about series which are coming up, and it's like, oh no, I can't do that. You know, it's like, you know, they were talking about the Black Widow series coming up and all this, and I'm like, ah.
Well, I'm telling you right now, if they ever greenlight another Union Jack series, and you're not the guy that draws it, I'm going to be personally very upset.
Yeah, well, you know, enough time might have passed by the time the stand's wrapped up that we might be able to do that. Who knows?
That would be great. Now, was that was you and Christos, right?
Yeah. Christos is writing, and that was fantastic. I mean, it was just like a pure action film.
But, it was great.
But
was
still, great. I mean, still, it wasn't a quick read. It wasn't like a 4-minute read.
No, it was great. And so, you can tell whenever you guys are really vested into a character like that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's, you know, talking. I mean, you're British. You grew up in England, and did you? You know, obviously, Marvel UK was a big influence on a lot of folks over there. But are you a 2000 AD guy? I mean, is it a massive
2000 AD fan.
It's kind of impossible to grow up over there and not be a 2000 AD comic book fan, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when the first and second issue came out, and they had some Biotronic Man stickers. that you you put on your arm, and these little stickers with gears and levers inside. So you could actually trick people into thinking that you have bionic in your arm.
That's awesome. And,
Your mom was terrified, of course.
It's like $6 million man stuff.
I remember when it was mm-hmm. introduced. And I followed it for many, many years. And, I'm still interested in what goes on now. I buy a lot of the collection.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just actually plowing my way through the Nikolai Dante stuff, which is just fantastic reading. I'm a big 2080 fan, and it's where some of my first work was as well. So.
Yeah, it's kind of a rite of passage, isn't it? You know,
for British writers and artists, for most English guys. I mean, it was terrifying for me as well because my second piece of professional work was a Judge Dredd strip.
Wow.
So I was terrified because it was like, aren't you supposed to build your way up to this?
Yeah.
You know, I was, and I'm sure I can't even look at it now, but I mean, that's not really saying much. I can't look at stuff I did, a year ago. So, it's,
well, that's a good sign. That's a good sign. If you can look at it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But, even when I was doing it, I was terrified. So, maybe one day I can go back and redo it at some point,
Yeah, I actually, in a weird way, British comics were my gateway into comics.
Right.
I was a big Doctor Who fan, and even without knowing it, the first comic I ever bought was like a Marvel premiere, I think. And
The Dave Gibbons stuff.
Yeah, and it was the reprints of the old Doctor Who Weekly stuff, which was just amazing stuff. So I guess Dave Gibbons being the first artist that you ever see in a comic book is a pretty good way to come in.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean that stuff is I remember the premiere stuff as well, but I remember when that stuff came out and the black and white work in it. Mm. I mean, it was really colored for the American market, but if you ever see it in black and white, it's just gorgeous.
They do. I've seen a few reprints of them in the black and white, and it's gorgeous, gorgeous line work. And
it is.
There were some great
little backup strips in it as well.
Oh yeah,
in the actual comic. I mean the Steve Dillon Absalom Dark Dalek Killer stuff.
I found a reprint. I found a collection of that, and and I just loaned it to a friend. It's like who's more of a new school Doctor Who fan. That's watching the new series, and I was like, here is some nineteen seventies stuff.
Right.
And it's you kind of forget that Steve Dillon was doing stuff in the late 70s for 2080, and it's the Absalom Dak. Backups. It's brilliant stuff, and boy,
it is. And I mean that's it for me. It was basically that era of Steve Dillon when he was doing that, and mm-hmm. he was doing Dredd, and he was doing Axel Press Button, and he and Brian Bolland were my two biggest influences.
Oh sure.
And so, like, the Absalom Dark stuff is just fantastic.
Oh, do you get no cooler than a guy with a chainsaw sword? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're however old I was, 8, 9 years old, and you're reading about this maniac Dalek killer, like, piloting a spacecraft when he's totally drunk. That's fantastic.
It was great. Yeah, it's like, we're going to sentence you to death, or we're going to send you to a planet to fight Daleks, and your life expectancy is like 45 seconds. He's like, okay, that sounds, better than dying here. It was great stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so I obviously, growing up and reading that stuff, and that was a big gateway for you into the industry. I also, I took a peek at your wiki entry, and you were living in Poland for a while.
I was living there for about 2.5-3 years because I met my wife in England. Mm-hmm. She wasn't my wife then, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I met her in England, and then when she's Polish, and she moved back to Poland to finish her degree, and I went back. I went over with her and stayed there for 2.5-3 years. So I enjoyed it. It was fantastic.
But you were working comics and graphic design.
The thing. I mean, it was like, well, I can do this job wherever I go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I might as well do it over there. And it actually helped a lot because I was doing a lot of the Caliber work at that time. And Caliber work you just basically didn't get paid for. But it was an opening to the other comic companies because they want to see that you've been published.
Oh yeah, but I mean, think about the guys that came out of Caliber though.
Yeah, yeah.
Ed Brubaker, Bendis, Phil Hester,
Michael Lark was there, and there's loads of people who started work at Caliber.
I'm hoping that's my dream is that at some point, and they've talked about it, it's just everybody works at different companies and exclusive contracts and all this stuff, but at some point I would love to see a Caliber reunion anthology.
Right.
It's real. Caliber was, and a lot of people don't even realize, Caliber was really kind of the blueprint for how we read comics today. I mean, all of the big guys were at Caliber. It's nuts.
Yeah, definitely. And so for me, it was great to be living in Poland at that time, because I could do some work for 2000 AD, and that would cover me for 3 to 4 months of living expenses. And during that time, I could work on the Caliber stuff, which I didn't see any money from, really. But like I said, you know, it's all about getting the stuff published and getting it in front of other publishers. So I enjoyed doing that stuff as well, because, you know, black and white stuff. And that's where I first worked with Mike Carey as well. So we did a Dr. Faustus adaptation together. And we just got on so well. And we've worked together a few times on other things as well. So, you know, these kind of creative partnerships, there's so many of them that started there at Caliber.
Did because you were living in Poland, was there ever any confusion that people thought you were a Polish artist?
I don't think so. I mean, at that point, there wasn't really, the internet was around, but it wasn't so widespread.
Yeah.
So, you know, most of the editors I spoke with on the phone, and, you know, so there wasn't, you know, a few of them were like, yeah, living in Poland, you know, and they're so confused about it, but, you know, there wasn't any problem with that. And plus the fact I had an agent in England who got most of my work there.
Gotcha.
You know, so, you know, there wasn't really that problem.
Well, I was going to ask you, because we're talking, what, early 90s here? Probably 92, 93?
Mid-90s, yeah.
Okay, mid-90s. Yeah. And this is really before, I mean, it's such an internet-driven industry now. It's especially for our, you know, well, writers and artists. You know, a writer will email you a script, and then you're gonna email proofs and actually FTP stuff. You know, but like early, mid-90s, it was still very much a FedEx world. Is that how you were working?
Yeah, it was all fax, you know. It was like, you know, his. I mean, the good thing with the Caliber stuff was you didn't really have to get the layouts approved or anything like that. You know, you just sat down and did the work and then FedExed it.
Okay.
You know, so, and even if you had to get things approved, it was done by, you know, the fax. But yeah, I mean, everything's completely changed now.
Oh, it's crazy. Well, the stuff that you were doing at Caliber led on eventually to work with CrossGen, right? Was that the next stop?
Eventually. I mean, when we moved back to England, this was like 98.
Mm-hmm.
I'd started to meet up. I mean, even before going over to Poland, I would meet up with a group of artists in Birmingham, in England. And, you know, people like Mark Farmer and Phil Winslade and Steve Pugh and James Hodgkins, John McRae, all these kind of people, we would get together maybe once a month, in a pub, of course.
Of course.
And and we'd just getting to talk with people. I was talking with Phil Winslade, and we were talking about inking, and he was trying to find someone to ink his work. And I said, oh, I'll give it a go. So he sent me a blue line, and he liked what I did. And that led to me starting to ink other people's work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, you know, in England, you kind of do everything anyway. You pencil, you ink, you color, whatever. But that led to me inking other people's work. And so it continued to lead to other jobs. So I was doing a lot of work for DC and Dark Horse. And then it's the Green Lantern Aliens work that I did mm-hmm. when I was inking over Rick Leonardi, which led to the Crushton stuff. Because Ron Mars was writing that. And then Mark Alessi saw that work, and I started inking George Perez at Crushgen.
Wow.
And then it was like, well, you know, get this guy over here. We want him over here. So,
you know, I have a tremendous respect for inking and inkers. And
right.
It's really one of the truly underappreciated by fans.
Yeah.
Not by artists, but I think by fans.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Were you afraid that it's like, you know, you're obviously an incredibly talented penciler. Were you afraid at that point that you were going to get labeled as an inker only an inker?
I wasn't. You know, I've been working for a few years on doing stuff for 2000ZE and Games mm-hmm. Workshop and for Marvel UK and DC as well. And at that point, I was kind of like, you know, it's going to be nice to have a rest for a couple of years. And just ink people. I mean, that makes it sound demeaning, but it's not like that. What I mean is it's a totally different mindset.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, the best way for me to describe it, and the best way I try to describe it to people who don't understand about the inking process, is that when you're penciling, you can put a CD on, and that CD is finished, and you haven't even heard it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when you're inking, you can put a CD on and sing along to it, you know. And so that's what I mean by it being a different mindset.
Well, I remember I talked to Rick Remender a while back, and Rick is a guy who kind of started in the industry as an inker, and then kind of moved. He was inking Kieran Dwyer's work on The Avengers when Geoff Johns was writing.
And
Rick kind of came into the industry as an inker, and he talked about kind of the hurdles that he had to get over for people to understand that he could do other things besides inking. I think it's sometimes in the American market that you can get pigeonholed. But I asked him I asked him if he ever wanted to go back and do some inking, and he says, "Yeah, absolutely. I love it because it's very cathartic."
It is.
It's very, very.
And plus the fact that you work with a lot of different artists,
mm-hmm.
so you actually learn a lot as well from the way they approach their pencils. I learned a ton at Crushgen working with Butch Geiss. I mean, it was fantastic, just seeing how he worked and, you know, how to figure out the different the line weights and everything. And that was fantastic. As Butch always used to joke about it, he was like saying, you know, don't ink what I put down. Ink my intention. You know, so it was great fun. It was great fun to work with Butch and learn that style. I think in my case. Because I'd done some penciling before as well, I wasn't really scared that I would just be pigeonholed as an inker. But it was happening. It was happening as well. So.
Well, you look at a guy like Butch Geiss, and it's interesting that you would work with him because, there are artists that work in, you know, I think kind of like these families of styles. And it's like you and Steve Epting and Butch Geiss, and maybe even Mike Lark to a lesser extent. But, I mean, you guys are a family of artists. It's like, okay, these guys could work on the same book and keep the same tone. And obviously, that was a big part of Captain America.
With Butch, I mean, it was. I was actually down to ink another artist at Crushgen,
mm-hmm.
and then Ron Mars was saying, telling me that they were trying to get Butch Geiss in to work at Crushgen, and I said to him, you know, I said, okay, you know, if he joins Crushgen, then I have to ink him, you know, because our styles are kind of similar and. You know, I love his work. It'd be nice to work with him, and so that's how it came about. And actually, it was in the one because we had areas of quads at Crushgen, And in our quad, it was me, Butch, and Steve. So, you know, I don't think that was a conscious thing either. It was just the way it fell. And we found that we had a lot of the same influences, really. And, you know, also you're working with other artists, and they tell you about some of their influences that maybe you haven't even come across before.
Sure.
So there was a lot of, you know, a lot of that kind of, you know, showing other artists to other artists at CrossGen. So that was a great thing.
You were working in a bullpen atmosphere there?
Yeah. There, I mean, it was towards the end of it, there were about 100 of us in the building.
Wow.
Working on different things. But yeah, I mean, there were basically six different quads, six different areas. There were maybe, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There were about 6 or 7 different artists in each quad. And then there were offices down the one wall, which was where the writers were working. And so it was great to have the writers there, because you could just go over ideas with them and say, okay, well, what if we took the story in this direction? And, you know, and you could argue about it and go back and forth on it. And it was an interesting setup. It was very creative in a way.
Wow, that's very disappointing after everything that happened. Because that sounds like an. I mean, you hear about, you know, the Marvel bullpen of the 60s,
right.
and you think about how creative that was. I think it was that bullpen was set up for, I think, different financial reasons than
right.
the creative
right.
ones. But it sounds like the CrossGen was really more of a creative. You know, I don't want to call right. it think tank. But that seems to be the idea. Do you miss working like that? I assume now that you're you know the stereotypical, you know, isolated artist now.
Right. in a way, I mean, it was the first time I worked in that kind of studio environment, and you know, I think everybody got a lot out of it. I mean, after every page you did, you put a photocopy up on the wall of the quad so that everybody could see where you were in the book you were doing that month. But it was also like, you know, you would see people's artwork and go, oh, man, I've got to try harder.
Really?
This is great stuff. So there was a nice competition there as well. And after Crush Unfolded, I did the Elektra adaptation for the movie at home. And after being in the studio of 100 people and then, you know, just being on my own again, I was like, oh, man, I got to get a studio going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. There was me, Drew Hennessy, Butch, and Laura Martin, and we got a studio together and worked that way for another 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then after then, you know, we just went back to our lonely little rooms, you know?
I was going to say, you had to gear out of the big bullpen.
Yeah, yeah, it was like a decompression chamber, you know?
slowly rise back to the surface of being the isolated artist. You know, it is kind of exciting to see in some of the towns, like, you know, Portland with Periscope, and, you know, being here in
right.
Chicago, there are little studios that pop
right.
up with folks. Now, you're in Central Florida. Is there a decent artist community there? I mean, are you able to spend time?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the people stayed around after CrossGen as well. I would say it's like 50-50, like 50% moved away, 50% stayed around.
That's not bad.
But we didn't really, you know, we haven't really talked about, you know, getting a studio together.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that CrossGen was good for was that when people moved down here, they because they had a salary, they, for the first time, a lot of people could afford to buy houses.
Yeah.
You know, so after Crush Unfolded, it was like, well, you know, you can go back to work in your house and you can also claim some of that back on the taxes, you know.
Sure.
So it was like, well, okay, you know, what is the real use of having a studio in that sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
And there are worse places to live than Florida.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, sometimes you're sitting here and you're thinking, oh, can't really go anywhere. You know, it's too hot. But you can't really complain about that, really.
Do you ever miss the cold and damp of Mother England?
I do. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, it's.
Well, come to Chicago in the springtime, sir. We'll take care of you.
Yeah, I mean, especially in places like England or you know, in Europe, where the distances are a lot smaller.
Sure,
that's kind of what I miss. You know, I remember talking to Butch the first time I was here, and he was saying that he'd been to see his dad in I think it was North Carolina, and I'm like, wow. And he drove up. He drove up there from Tampa. I'm like, how long does that take? He said 12 hours, and I'm like, what? In 12 hours? You know, from England, you've gone from England, you've gone through Paris and Belgium, and you're in Germany, you know?
You're crossing countries. Well, my parents, and we're getting, put personal information here, but my parents just bought a house down in Florida, and my dad is driving down this week, and I'm like, well, how long is it going to take you to drive down? And, you know, we're in Chicago, and he's like, about 20 hours. I'm like, God, that's a two day drive. And
I know.
It's
I know. Crazy. I mean, the first time I came here, people were saying, oh, it's just down the road, it's 2 hours away.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, it was like, 2 hours? 2 hours in England? You're going on holiday somewhere, you know?
My daily commute is 2 hours, Mike. It's an hour each way. I spend 2 hours a day in the car. So that's, and I wear a big cowboy hat and drive a huge truck.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so from CrossGen, you after the unfortunate demise of CrossGen, you went right to Marvel. You say you're working some Elektra stuff, and then I guess what the Union Jack Mini wasn't too far after that, or was that?
I was at CrossGen right until they closed the doors, simply because I was there on a visa. Work visa for CrossGen. So I couldn't actually officially look around for other work while CrossGen was still open. You know, so I was literally there until the doors were shut. And then as soon as that happened, Marvel got in touch with me and said, you know, don't worry about your visa stuff. We'll take care of that, you know, and come and work for us.
Because your wife is Polish and you're British and you're over here on a visa. So, that had to be worrisome.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Especially, as you know, we bought a house and all this kind of stuff as well. So, and my wife was working at the university here. And so, you know, it was a worrying time, really. But then Marvel stepped in. And I did a Spider-Man Unlimited story with them, and then a District X fill-in, and then I did Spellbinders again with Mike Carey, and that was nice to work on because it was entirely new characters. It was a new book, you know. So that was an interesting time, and it was just around when I was wrapping up Spellbinders that I was starting to do some inks over Steve Etzing on Captain America. And I was wrapping up Spellbinders, and they asked me to become Steve's permanent inker on the book. And like you said, that, you know, you start to get pigeonholed as the inker. And after CrossGen, I was really trying to establish myself as a penciler again. So I politely turned them down. I said, well, you know, I'm really trying to establish myself again, and I don't want to be pigeonholed as an inker. I think it was Ed, I guess Ed and Tom Brevoort had spoken about it, and Ed came back to me and said, well, do you want to do alternate arcs, you know, on Captain America, penciling and inking? So, I mean, that was just a win, win situation, you know. But I also realized that, well, if I'm doing this many issues per year, I still need to do something else.
Yeah.
So that's when I approached Marvel with the Union Jack idea. Because at that point, he was kind of part of the Captain America universe. So that's how the Union Jack stuff came up.
Yeah, he hadn't been touched since the Cassaday mini a few years before.
Yeah, well, you know, the Invaders thing was there, mm-hmm. that came out, and he was in the first few issues of Captain America, but he was wearing a hockey mask, and you know, you don't want to go that route.
Yeah,
you know? What,
yeah.
Especially when you got such an iconic costume, you know, what's the use of changing it? So I actually was in Chicago. Actually, I went up to Andy Schmidt at one mm-hmm. of the conventions, and he was editing. He was one of the editors on Captain America at that time. And I mentioned to him, I said, you know, how about a Union Jack thing? And he wandered off, and I was like, I didn't think it was that bad of an idea. And then he came back with a proposal that Christoph had given him to read over that weekend
for a
Union Jack series.
Oh, serendipity.
So that it just fell together. It was mm-hmm. great.
That's fantastic. And I love that mini, and I hope you go back to that character. But
I've got some ideas in my head mm-hmm. of Union Jack stories. So
I know that you've got a lot of affection for Captain America, and especially like World War II era Captain America.
Right.
So it's get all those invaders together and do something.
That'd be a sweet thing to do. We've spoken about that at length before, me and you. You know, when you introduced me to Greg Rucker mm-hmm. at Chicago, mm-hmm. and me and Greg were talking about that, and if that possibility ever came up, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, it's you would make a lot of people happy doing a just an old school World War II invaders book.
Yeah.
And I would love to see. I've been watching the Pacific, and it just stuff just lights a fire for you to read those. Was DC, I saw, is gonna do a bunch of one shots on their old war comics. Did you see that?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah.
Like old Haunted Tank and that kind of stuff. So I'm excited about that.
That looks pretty interesting.
Oh, I love that. Love that era of stuff. I'm actually rereading the Kirby Losers right now.
Okay.
And as dated as that stuff is, it's still cool. It's still a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, Butch gave me a lot of those comics actually.
Oh, they're so fun.
The Losers stuff.
Oh, so good. Well, I tell you what, what's up? Let's get ready to wrap up here. We've got Hard Cases number one is coming out. So it's the over the halfway mark with
it's
the Stand.
The fourth arc mm-hmm. of this run. I think the third collection comes out in July as well. There'll be three collections on the stands, and then the Hard Cases is running concurrently at the same time.
Very cool. I decided to pick this one up in singles because you guys put some you put some amazing extras in every issue. It has either like cover breakdowns or pencil pages.
Yeah, there's always a mad rush at the end. You know, it's like, oh no, we need some backup material. What have we got?
It's so good though. I mean, it really does give you a little bit more bang for your buck on them. And just the pacing. I mean, it's a Stephen King novel, so I mean, there's a lot of suspense, a lot of drama. And it's one of those comics that really works well in the single issue. I'm sure that the collections are beautiful, but I've been buying in singles. It's a really fun series, man.
I enjoy it definitely.
Yeah. Did you get to meet Stephen King? I forgot to ask you that.
No. He has emailed me mm-hmm. a few times. You know, and he's really enjoying it. You know, he told me that he's like a kid in a candy shop every time an issue comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice to hear.
That's cool. Hopefully you may. Have you read his son is writing a pretty awesome series.
What, Lock and Key?
Lock and Key is
that's fantastic.
It's one of my favorite books on the shelves. And
it is.
Yeah.
It's one of mine as well. It's great. And his novels, I haven't read his new novel yet,
mm-hmm.
Horns, but his previous novel, the
Heart-Shaped Box
and the 20th Century Ghosts,
Yeah.
That was great stuff. He's kind of got a similar voice to his dad as well.
And very much.
It works. It's very, very good.
Yep. Yeah, it's great stuff. And as is The Stand and everything else that you work on. So, Mr. Mike Perkins, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm glad we finally got to do an interview. It's like, I bump into you all the time.
Let's do another one soon.
Yeah, I tell you, whenever you're getting close to the end on The Stand, yep. we'll have to do a nice look back on it and get an idea what you're moving on to next. But
when this one shot is coming out as well, this one shot I can't talk about,
mm-hmm.
Then we'll do a quick interview for that as well.
Hey, that sounds good. Yeah, just shoot me a message, and we'll definitely get together on that. For folks that want to meet you in person at conventions this year, do you have your convention schedule all planned out?
Not really. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm hoping to go to New York, and that's about it this year. I've recently had a baby, so
congratulations.
I'm kind of tied at home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pleasantly tied at home at the moment. So, I think New York is the next one for me.
Well, that's the only other one I'm going to this year. So,
see you there.
Yep. So we can buy each other a proper drink. It sounds like a good
Excellent.
Time. All right. Well, Mike, congratulations on the new addition to the family and all the success.
Thanks a lot.
And enjoy the heat and humidity down there in Florida.
I will.
All right. Good talking to you, man.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye bye. All right, and a big thanks to Mr. Mike Perkins. Definitely check out The Stand. Hard Cases, the fourth miniseries, is coming out this week. And go back, read the rest of the series. I mean, if you're a Stephen King fan, there's no reason not to. And Mike has been just knocking it out of the park with the art on that series. It's been fantastic. And like we talked about earlier in the episode, check out the Union Jack mini that he did with Christos Gage. Mike is a fantastic artist and certainly a guy that I'm always on the lookout to see what he is working on next. Want to thank everyone for listening to iFanboy Talk Explode. Check out all the great things that iFanboy.com has to offer. There's great articles and columns with feedback from iFanboy listeners just like you. You can check out iFanboy's awesome pull list service to make sure that you don't miss comics each week as they come out at the comic shop. Check out the iFanboy video show on Wednesday, the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast on Sunday or Monday. There's the iFanboy Don't Miss show, which I sit in on quite a bit. Just all the awesome stuff at iFanboy.com. Doing great stuff over there. So definitely make that a daily part of your internet surfing. All right, thanks again for listening. Drop by the iTunes Music Store, leave a review if you can. Would really appreciate it. Everyone have a great rest of your week and weekend, and we'll check you out again on iFanboy Talks.